numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in this morning, we do appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin in the house. Or as Kelly was saying yesterday, watch the World Baseball Classic. By World Baseball Classic rules, you could perhaps play for Venezuela since you spent time there as Kelito Bidlones.
Oh, man.
Play a little shortstop for him.
Yeah, shout out to Lars Newbar or whatever that guy's name was.
Who plays for Japan.
I'm like, who's this guy?
How good has this tournament been? You even got into it last night.
Well, those last three innings were awesome last night.
That night.
I definitely did not jump off my couch at one point with my arms in the air and yell, Yoshida!
We will have Jason Weingarten on the show today to talk about the World Baseball Classic final, the championship today between Japan and the United States of America. While March Madness was going on, by the way, he was at Circa with his buddies on Saturday, was it, I guess? And that was Saturday was the day that USA played Venezuela and Trey Turner hit the Grand Slam. And he said, even during March Madness, the crowd at the sportsbook at Circa was chanting USA, USA. So if that's any indication of this tournament capturing the attention of people, there you go. I mean, it's been a success. I know a lot of people are like, oh, man, Edwin Diaz injury, Jose Altuve injury. Is this really worth it? The players think it's worth it. And it's been fantastic. So we'll talk to Jason about that. He has a MVP bet that he has made in the National League. And he has a season win total under that he has made as well that he feels very passionately about. We'll talk to Jason later on the show. Rick Gaiman on golf this week. They're in Punta Cana. They start in the tournament a day early because of March Madness. Is that what they do?
We got two events, a Punta Cana event and then Austin for the match play for the WGC Dell Technologies
okay.
match play.
So we'll talk about the format there as well. Drew Densick will join us to talk tennis, to talk NBA with us as well. Chrissy, no kicking it with Chrissy today because he's recovering from the appendectomy, mourning the loss of his appendix, I believe is what's happening there, Kelly. And then Jim Root from Three Man Weave to talk college hoops, Sweet 16, what his thoughts are as we come to the tournament resumption on Thursday. Looking forward to that. Oh, and Mel Kiper has a draft 3.0, a mock draft 3.0. Is he three deep and like guys like Jeremiah aren't even one in yet?
It's funny you say that because I was wondering that earlier today. Yeah. Yes, I believe. Yes, I believe you're right.
Spoiler alert. The good guys at number one, if you know what I mean, based on our bets.
Yeah, and there's a lot of quarterbacks soon to follow.
Yeah. Real quick, so before we get to all our guests, let's just get into some of the things that we did not get to yesterday because we were just all college hoops yesterday. We'll get to the NBA Most Improved Player Award, which we did not get to yesterday momentarily. But just to update some of the tournament trends in the interest of getting every sort of detail of thoroughness out, some of these trends that people love over the years. Obviously, folks know, you know, before this tournament, one number 16 seed had beaten a number one seed, UMBC, the Retrievers of Maryland, Baltimore County, beating Virginia in 2018. Obviously, Fairleigh Dickinson beating Purdue adds a second to that historically. 10 number 15 seeds had beaten number two seeds historically. Now it's 11 with Princeton having beaten Arizona. The subset of that was that only two number 15 seeds had advanced past the second round before. Florida Gulf Coast made it to the Sweet 16 in 2013. Who could forget that run, beating Georgetown and San Diego State before they lost to Florida? And then Oral Roberts as a 15 seed in 2021, just a couple years ago, they became the second to do so, beating Ohio State and Florida before losing to Arkansas. Now Princeton has done it by beating Arizona and Mizzou. They attempt to be the first 15 seed to ever get to the Elite Eight, facing Creighton, but they're 10-point dogs in that game. One seed has won the title in the last five NCAA tournaments, Kelly. Houston and Alabama trying to make it six. At least one number one seed has reached the Final Four in the last nine tournaments. Make that 10 now with Houston and Alabama getting, Houston and Alabama trying to make it 10 as well. Pardon me. The five seed is the highest seed to never win, never, ever. Yeah. Win an NCAA tournament, Miami and San Diego State trying to buck that trend if you're into that kind of thing. First four teams have reached the Final Four only twice, VCU and UCLA. That will remain just those two teams. And finally, the last team from the Pacific or Mountain time zones to win a title, Arizona 1997, only UCLA can buck that this year, if you're into that kind of thing again. Oh, by the way, Jared Earls tweeted in yesterday. I believe it's Jared Earls. I don't want to mess up his name. He was talking about, isn't UCLA disqualified as well because they only beat two teams in the top 10% of RPI headed into the tournament? Yes, and that's not something you can play your way into, but it can be reverse engineered. In other words, teams in the tournament that they played, that UCLA played during the regular season, could play their way in to the top 10%, if that makes sense, of who UCLA already played. So it was a bit of reverse engineering on that. It's a little counterintuitive. But that said, I don't think there are any teams that UCLA played that even applies to here. So you would be right, actually, Jared. So apologies for that. You would be right that UCLA is probably disqualified from the championship formula as well, which would leave us with Alabama, Houston, and Creighton, if we're being precise about it. UCLA and then the two teams who haven't had a coach get to the Sweet 16, Texas and UConn being the other two that almost qualify but have one sort of eliminator, if you will. As far as, you know, what happened last night, again, Japan plating two runs in the ninth. Shohei Ohtani leading that charge with a double in the ninth. Two batters later, two RBI victory for Japan over Mexico. And I think the word from Mexico's manager was the correct one, which is baseball won. Even in defeat, he said that. He's like, this has just been an unbelievable tournament.
Oh, it was great.
But we also had a couple things in the NBA.
A Rosarena with the Rob. And then signing autographs afterward.
A lot of, yeah. Rob's the home run, sits there and poses, right? Styling and profiling, and then signs the ball and hands it over to somebody
this
outside the
outfield.
This
is what baseball needs to
fence.
Embrace. Those are the kinds of things they need to embrace. Bat flips, that kind of stuff, whatever.
Yes, 100%. NBA Julius Randle drops 57, but the Knicks still lose to the T-Wolves, 140 to 134. Julius Randle did not appear to be happy about that result, pounding everything in his sight.
Yeah, they were pretty bad down the stretch.
And then the Bulls beat the Sixers in double overtime last night, 109 to 105. Each team had a chance to win it. Sixers in regulation, Bulls in overtime. Couldn't do it, but the Bulls get it done in double. Embiid with 37 and 16. Now that the Sixers have lost, though, the Sixers fall a half game behind the Celtics now in the Atlantic Division. Remember, they had taken over the lead briefly. Now they're back to a half game behind. And I joked with some folks yesterday. I'm like, hey, did you see the new MVP odds? Because of that Sixers loss, Jokic is back to minus 240. And I wanted to see how many people bought it, right? Some did. Some were like, really? I'm just trying to make a point about how ridiculous it is that Jokic has fallen that far. We talked briefly about MVP yesterday. By the way, I'm joking. Jokic still the dog in this race, despite the Sixers loss yesterday. But that's how flimsy I think that market move is. We didn't get to NBA's most improved player yesterday, which I want to sort of clean up on that.
Yeah, which I think you can say a lot of similar things about this market as the MVP.
Namely, the thing that you and I have been talking about specifically is that first of all, here are the numbers. Lauri Markkanen of the Utah Jazz is now minus 550. Whoa. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, no relation, plus 475 now. Jalen Brunson 14-1, Mikal Bridges 45-1. But now, what have we been saying the whole time about this? We've been saying, historically, if you look at this award, this does not historically tend to go to guys. Now follow me here, because I know most of us are immersed in sports listening to this here show. But for the casual fan, Lauri Markkanen has come from relative obscurity to being really good at basketball. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander was known to most casual fans already as already good, and how it now, I would say, has reached, if not an elite level, just below that. So he's gone from already good to great. Now, you can fudge with that description of what I'm saying, but I'm getting to the point of that's who most improved player awards historically go to. They go to the guys that are already pretty established and then take it up a notch. So, Kelly, just a brief sort of cursory look back in history.
Yeah.
Last year was Ja Morant. The year before that, the aforementioned Julius Randle. The year before that, Brandon Ingram. Siakam was before that, but it's hard to determine how well-known he was in 2019. Oladipo in 2018, Giannis in 2017, CJ McCollum in 2016, Jimmy Butler in 2015, Goran Dragic 2014, Paul George 2013. That was after that Vegas injury, that horrible Vegas injury. But you get the idea. Kevin Love in there as well. I mean, those are big names. Morant, Randall, Ingram, Antetokounmpo, McCollum, George, Love. And they weren't obscure at the time. They were already known in all of those situations. So are we really thinking that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's not going to win this at plus 475?
I sure hope he's going to. Can't believe you'd skip over the great Ryan Anderson.
I'm sorry.
Year of 2011, pardon 2012. Me. Who could ever forget
Didn't
that?
Didn't mean to mention that.
I think the other thing that's worth pointing out, it's the... Yeah, the formula we always talk about, Gil, it's also these are the guys that all everybody you just spoke of are younger players that are constantly on the rise. They're right. They had good rookie years, had good second years, getting that third, fourth year, and they get into that territory where they win this award. You know, Lowry Markkanen and Jalen Brunson have been around for five, six seasons each, too. So they kind of plateaued and then have taken it up a notch. I'm at the point, like MVP, that if any three of these guys win the award, I wouldn't go crazy over it. I'm a little like Brunson and Shai have been punished, much like in the MVP market, because they've missed games. They've just missed a few games here recently, and Lowry Markkanen's odds have shot up.
NBA Most Improved, by the way, voted on by a panel of sports writers throughout the U.S. and Canada, each of whom cast a vote for first, second, and third place. It should be noted, no fan vote here. But a first, second, third tiering on these. Interesting. Plus 475, maybe worth a flyer. Drew Dinsick next. He's got a great Mike Brown ticket on the way.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. We get tweets at Beatty the Book. Man, are some of these are spectacular. This is from Douglas yesterday. This might be one of my favorite tweets ever. It says, with respect, Gil, you're such a nerd thinker, but you lack the remaining nerd persona to fully qualify. I didn't know that I was attempting to reach the Nerd Hall of Fame or anything. Thank you. Is that a compliment? I have no idea what that is. That's so great. This is from, by the way, I love just everybody tweeting on all kinds of different things. This is from Linda Cardia. Good morning, good sir. I know it's March and there's a lot going on, but I'm thinking about the guy you had on last year that steered you and us to a lesser degree into the college baseball futures. I don't remember his name, but I do remember that win. Brad Porras. We'll get to college baseball.
I thought we were going to be talking about Benny and the Bets.
Oh, Ben Wilson. Even Ben Wilson will tell you, be like, I can't believe I'm 9-0. It's right? Like, how did I become a college baseball expert? We'll get Ben on too if he's into it. Sports Savant. Seconds ago, I ruminated out loud. I was like, has Daniel Jeremiah put out mock drafts? He literally just put out his third seconds ago, and it's different from Kuiper's at the top. And Jeremiah, I would say, historically is the most accurate of these mock drafters. He's got Bryce Young at number one, not C.J. Stroud, which Kuiper does have. What is Daniel Jeremiah's thinking at the top, for those who care about such things? He says, the Panthers will do their homework on this year's top quarterback prospects over the next month, but I believe Young is the best of the bunch and will emerge as their target. That's his thinking. Do we have this Bill Beard tweet ready to go, Kelly?
No.
We don't. Okay. So should I not go with it? We'll do it later.
Yeah, would we?
It's phenomenal. Bill Beard's tweet might be the greatest of all time. I thought I had the greatest of all time moments ago, but this might be. Mark Geiger, in-house attorney, numbers game. He goes, yes, World Baseball Classic matters to the players. We really saw the thrill of victory and agony of defeat last night. Reminded me why I've loved baseball since that July day in 1958. When my six-year-old self experienced the magic of Wrigley Field for the first time, Banks and Mays in the flesh. Wow. Let's end the tweets on that one for now. It's a beautiful thing. Little Field of Dreams feel to that one. Drew Dinsick joins us, everybody, from not just one but two podcasts, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, Dinsick Classic, as we call it, and, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge. Drewski, how you doing, man?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How did Indian Wells work out for you?
Well, Carlos Alcaraz saved the day.
Yep, he did.
Can't really say anything else. I had big positions on Iga that went into the fireplace on Friday, whatever night. I think that was a surprise. In fact, she wasn't even competitive against Rybakina's. A little concerning. I loaded up pretty heavily on Alcaraz, as we were talking on your show last week. That was the highest EV play on the board on the men's side by far. And he came through for me in spades. That was outside of the Australian Open, that was the biggest tennis position I took this year. So pretty solid outcome there. And the fact that it was no sweat on Sunday.
None.
That made it that much sweeter. And, I mean, we could talk about it being no sweat because Medvedev's strategy was absolutely horrific and because he was an unforced error machine. But I think that takes away from the broader point, which was Carlos Alcaraz produced some of the most beautiful tennis I've seen in a long time in that match and in that tournament. And honestly, at 19 years old, if he's going to be able to perform at that level and he's going to be able to take, you know, top five players in the world completely out of their element, this is definitely sort of the dawn of a new era, and I'm pretty excited to see it.
I'm more associated with Iga. At Carlos Alcaraz saved that tournament for me as well, because the matches were kind of a break-even thing, just as close to zero as you could get. But Alcaraz, I used to bet on him when he was 16 years old in like obscure clay tournaments in the darkness somewhere in Latin America, and you could tell then, you're like, you know, even then, I remember coming on the show and saying, this kid is going to be incredible. The problem was that you had Djokovic and Nadal and Federer, and so it wasn't as tangible on the men's side to proclaim him anything. But he is, I've called the Warriors the most beautiful thing in sports. Carlos Alcaraz is the best show in sports, period. He's otherworldly, and as you say, at the age of 19, just incredible. And as the second of the Sunshine Double now approaches us, and by the way, you're right about Medvedev. Like, Medvedev standing on serves, you know, by the wall is always going to, at some point, going to come back to haunt him. But he usually doesn't commit errors. He's usually a wall. He wasn't that day. Alcaraz in Miami now, installed as the plus 175 short shot, just a shade shorter than Daniil Medvedev at plus 275. And then everybody else, beginning with Jannik Sinner. Well, I should say Jannik Sinner's a little separated. He's 10-1. Everybody else 20-1 or beyond. That's kind of how it should be, right?
Yeah, I really don't see a huge obvious pricing mistake here. Medvedev is maybe the only exception. He shouldn't be 275. He should probably be closer to 5-1-ish. But Alcaraz at 175 is very close to fair. I don't think there's a huge angle to be had here. And also, like, some people looked at the draw and they were like, oh, it's a sunshine double, here we go. Others, like myself, I look at it and I'm like, oh, man, they're really trying to prevent that with some of the players that landed in the first quarter. Now, it's not to say Alcaraz is going to get beaten. I mean, he's in perfect form right now. Any injury questions you had for him to start the season, you have to basically throw out the window. But that said, he's going to have to play some tough competition to get out of his first quarter. And the problem is, once he does that, he's not losing the rest of the tournament.
Yeah.
So I still have a ton of respect for Holger Rune's game. And, if he didn't have this just absolutely unbelievably tough path to get out of Q1, I would probably have grabbed some Rune here, since he's kind of, market has cooled on him a little bit. But he's going to have to go through Fuchs, Yibing Wu, Taylor Fritz, and Alcaraz to get out of Q1. Those four matches alone, that's like a 250 title. So that gets him out of the quarter. And at that point, presumably you're playing Sinner. And at that point, presumably you're playing, Medvedev or somebody from the bottom half. Bottom half, again, very, much weaker, I think, than the top half here. There's no real whiff that there's going to be a surprise on the men's side at Miami.
The women is where it gets. The women is where it gets interesting.
I think we settled on the right point. Alcaraz wins.
Yeah, Alcaraz wins. Okay, so here it is. So Iga has dropped to plus 250. Now that's largely because of not only getting rolled by Rybakina, but then also saying right afterwards, "Hey, I have a rib injury, and I was in tremendous discomfort. And by the way, if you looked at her miles per hour on her forehand, you could see that there was a drop off. Now, which brings up a whole other analytics question. I brought this up yesterday, which is, you know, it's an individual sport, so you can't reveal injuries to your opponent kind of thing. That doesn't really serve us well betting wise. We had a tweet, which I could read about, you know, someone, Rich Pism, was talking about if we could see MPH on serves and that kind of thing in real time. But Iga's down to plus 250, Sabalenka plus 550, Rybakina 6-1. Krejcikova, who would, you know, again, if you're ranking these, if you're really doing your true WTA rankings right now in your head, I said this last week, Iga's probably one, Sabalenka's probably two, Rybakina's probably three, and actually right now at this moment, Krejcikova's probably four. And that's reflected in the numbers too at 8-1. Those are the only three players to have beaten Iga. And so I guess the question becomes, you look at her side of the bracket, Iga's that is, man, I mean, on her side, on her half, she's got Rybakina, she's got Badosa, she's got Pegula, I believe it is, yes, and she's got Coco, not to mention the Ostapenkos of the world. What do you do here? Do you bet Sabalenka and Rybakina hoping, or not hoping, but under the impression that Iga is somewhat hampered?
Yeah, so I thought there was a realistic chance she pulls out because, I mean, this it doesn't serve her well necessarily to try to play through a rib injury, give other women on tour some mental some opportunities to take a head to head against her and build up their confidence next time they play. And her best tennis starts in April on clay, and so she needs to be in top form for that. So I thought her camp might kind of convince her to pull out of this, and that still may happen. And in the light of that, I took some Sabalenka at 8-1 on the Open. That down to 550 is now very close to my fair. If Iga plays, if Iga is out, Sabalenka should be closer to the plus 250 range. Mm-hmm. Similarly with Rybakina, I would make Rybakina and Sabalenka your co number two right now on tour. Depending on if Rybakina can find the level she found at the end of Indian Wells, she's going to be very, very tough to beat, obviously, at any tournament, particularly on hard. Miami's a little faster than Indian Wells in general. But the only bet I've made outside of grabbing some Sabalenka 8-1, which is sadly no longer available, a bet that is available, your girl, Ludmila Samsonova.
Yeah.
80-1. And then to win Q2, I think are both fair bets.
Jeez, the numbers are great. The mentality, the mental fortitude may not be, if you know what I mean. Getting through some tough matches. But yeah, she's always tantalizing. On the other side, we'll get to whether Drew has any tennis picks today. We'll look at NBA Most Improved with him. We'll go over Markkanen and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's stats and any other NBA bets, including his Mike Brown ticket. What could go wrong next?
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get everything you need to bet the madness for only $19. Picks from VSiN hosts, analysts, and guests, including some three-man weavers, perhaps, that will be on the show, like Jim Root today. Plus, exclusive betting splits. Our team's here to get you ready for every game and every round of the tournament. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and get this special March offer for just $19. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. By the way, Kelly, do this thing. We were just talking about this off air. Or when you're texting or tweeting and you're trying to get to a certain letter, let's say it's like the C on your keyboard. What's the C next to? Can't think of it offhand. Oh, it's off next to the V. So sometimes when I go to try to hit the C, I hit the V repeatedly, or, and this is my amazing feat, you ready for this? Somehow I land on neither. And so when I type, I see that all the C's are missing. Does anybody else have this problem? Not that those specific letters, but where you go 4-5 times at it and you can't get it right?
Oh, yeah. I do too. I'm just glad to hear the people out there that don't have fat fingers like me struggle with the same thing. Just thought it was a fat finger problem.
We get tweets. Bill Hooker. Some friends and I have Jalen Brunson, most improved 125-1. Ooh.
Yeah, I know there's some big tickets out there on him.
Farzad Farzan, in your opinion, how much of a chance does Arkansas have to beat UConn this week? There's always a chance. If you're asking me who I got UConn. Jason Weingarten tweeting everybody that he's coming on the show later. Mark at Van Kemp, he says, will you be talking about NCAA Survivor this week? Yes, I did yesterday. I'll briefly do it again. Yesterday I said on the show that out of over 1,600, nearly 1,700 entries, I'm in seventh place. That is incorrect. The arranger of the pool made a clerical error. I'm in 12th place, Kelly. 12th place out of over 1,600 entries. So am I in it? Yes. Am I still a massive dog? Yes. Because that's how Survivor works. And now, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps the greatest tweet of all time. This one is from, and I want to get this right here because this is awesome. I thought we had the greatest tweet earlier. But this one is from Bill Beard at Right Beard. Hey, Gil, Kelly, might want to have a few words with YouTube TV about their closed captioning. And looking at his screen grab, we do appreciate it. Skill Alexander, I have no problem with that. It's Kelly Bin Laden in the house. There you
automatic
go.
Automatic closed captioning, ladies
Kelly
and gentlemen.
Bin Laden, everybody. Yeah. I will be introducing you that way every show for the rest of our time
this
here.
This is why for important events, they have human beings that do closed captioning.
Right. Skill Alexander, everybody.
And we were talking about all that AI stuff last week, and we can't even get closed captioning right still. Like, we're still struggling with that.
The chat GPS, though?
Yeah.
I believe it's chat. Maybe I have that wrong. Drew Dinsick joins us once again, kind enough to hang out with us. Real quick, Drew, on a couple things there. Let's follow up on a couple of those. One, do you have any tennis picks today? They start on the women's side in Miami with matches today. Anything, sir?
Took three dogs, all on the money line. My wunderkind hopeful, Brenda Fritova, not Linda, Brenda. Mm-hmm. She's a dog at plus 117. I think she can beat Wang. I took Shmidlova, plus 185 to win outright. Not really sold that Lauren Davis should ever be a minus 250 favorite. And then swung away on Kai Kanepi. I think she can get the better of Camilla Georgie. Camilla Georgie, known to really kind of lean into the Miami scene.
Yes. Well said.
I don't know. That was just the flyer.
Yeah. I have one. I took the over in the over 21 games in the Marta Kostyuk Elisabetta Cocciaretto match. Just wanted to say,
Elisabetta Cocciaretto.
Love her. I just like saying it that way. I took the over 21 in that, but yeah, I'm with you. I didn't really like go crazy today, and all the big players begin mañana. Okay, and then NBA Most Improved. And Kelly, can we throw out Lauri Markkanen and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander stats real quick?
Yeah, I can just go over kind of what I typed up here this morning. All right, Markkanen, 25.4 points per game, 8.6 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 40% from three this year. The improvement from last year, 14.8 points per game, 5.7 rebounds, 36% from three. Goes from 11.5 field goal attempts a game to over 17. Jalen Brunson, 23.8 points per game, 3.5 rebounds, 6.2%, 41% from three this year, improves from 16.3 points per game, 4.8 assists a game, and 37% from three. SGA, 31.4 points per game, fourth in the NBA, 5.5 assists, 4.8 rebounds, 1.7 steals, a block per game, shooting 90% from the free throw line, improves from 24.5 points per game, 5 rebounds, 5.9 assists, and 81% from the free throw line. And if we just go over to on-off splits that I grabbed from cleaning the glass, SGA plus 4.6, Markkanen plus 10.8 is where he really jumps off the screen there. And Jalen Brunson, not much of a difference when he's on slash off the court.
How many of the voters will just look at Markkanen from 14.8 to 25.4 and will look at Shai from 24.5 to 31.4 a game and just make their decision based on that?
I think a lot. I'm interested to hear what Drew's thoughts
are. Drew,
here's
the question. Is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander plus 475 worth a bet?
You know, it's tough to rule him out entirely, although if you had asked me this 2 weeks ago, I would have said he's dead money in the pool. Because he cooled off, like he was nuclear hot in, you know, the first few months of the season. He obviously earned a borderline starting all-star spot. So he was like, on track for all NBA. That's a huge, huge leap. But he having cooled off specifically and having missed a bunch of games because of illness, I thought basically that this was now Markkanen's to lose. Brunson, of course, has the New York voting block behind him, which matters. But the Knicks, of course, you know, if they had finished the season as torrid as they were in the month of, February, then, he was alive. But I don't think that having missed time and the Knicks in general cooling off is not helping his case. So Markkanen's to lose is still the right kind of prism to view this through, I believe. Going from 14 to 24 is more in the spirit of how this award is generally given out, right? Like it's, you know, going, you know, if you're already a 24 point per game player, people know you, they've anchored in their mind, how good are you? And you know, if you take your game up another level to 30, it doesn't really move the needle as much. I know Ja Morant kind of fit that mold last year more so than, previous winners, but the fact that Markkanen was basically a throwaway piece in the trade, and has turned the Jazz into a much better team than people expected, I think is going to ultimately carry the day for him in this award.
See, historically, they've actually done it, as we were saying many times, they've actually done it from someone who's already kind of well-known to someone who leaps to the next level, as opposed to from relative obscurity to good. But I will say this. Again, the way that it's voted on is 5-3-1. First, second, third place, 5-3-1. Let's get back to that New York voting block question.
Yep.
What if Shea is just second at worst in every one of these, but some of those Jalen Brunson voters may throw Lauri Markkanen down to third? Like, I really just wonder if that, and it could go the other way, right? It could be Jalen, Lauri Markkanen, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, but I wonder if this is an award where the person who has fewer first place votes ends up winning. Kind of thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't stop anyone from getting involved in this one, although I personally have very little skin in this market. Shea can, if he can carry the Thunder to a six seed and be out of the play-in, people are going to fall all over themselves to vote for him for this award.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you think that is more likely than 5-1, then 5-1 is better.
Your Mike Brown ticket is what, 80-1 to win Coach of the Year?
I got 80, 60, and 50.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Drew, I don't want you to say these words because I don't want you to jinx it. But if I say it, I don't think it's a jinx. You can't possibly lose this, can you? You can't.
No, it's possible for sure.
Who?
The way that I don't know what. Mike Brown, great job this season, buddy. What in the heck was going on in the first half yesterday? What were you thinking? What were those rotations? What are we doing?
Drew,
were you trying to make it hard for your team? I did not understand it, and I do not think you can lose like on standalone nights where there's no other sports except for the NBA. Like you can't be losing games like that to the Jazz. I mean, now most people aren't really watching that because it's Jazz Kings in the middle of the night for the East Coasters, surely. And honestly, the angle, I think, when we talked about a preseason for Mike Brown was literally if the Kings can just get into the playoff, not the play-in, and snap the longest streak in professional sports of not making the playoffs, then he will get the award. And yet here we sit, and it's almost like where the Kings have kind of been re-anchored as, oh, no, they're good. They clearly, they're top three in the West. Yeah, we get it now. And that if they fall into the 4 or 5, I feel like people are going to make a case for, to try to, give the award to someone else.
Oh,
and so I'm very much, I need to be playing defense on this.
No. Yeah. Real quick, we got 30 seconds. Your NBA plays for the day. What do you got?
Only thing I played was Oklahoma City +7. And honestly, I'm not a Clippers guy. So 7 points with OKC, who plays hard every night, give it to me.
Okay. Gotten. We gave it to you. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it, man.
Hey, best luck, guys.
Drew Dinsick, everybody. At @whale_capper on the Twitter machine. Deep dive with Andy Molitor and NBC Sports Bet the Edge.
See, I love the markets where I don't have skin in the game, so I can say, Drew, you won that award. You won that
That's
bet.
That's what I'm
you
saying.
You won all those.
Skill Alexander and Kelly Bin Laden, everybody. Coming back with Rick Gaiman on golf next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Even a wager that misses can still be a slam dunk with BetMGM, an authorized gaming partner of the NBA. Place an NBA one-game parlay wager with 4 legs or more, and if you miss one leg, you'll receive up to $25 back. Just opt into this promotion on BetMGM's app or website. With one-game parlay, you can make selections within a single NBA game, including team and player props. Opt into the promotion, then place an NBA one-game parlay wager of 4 legs or more, and you'll get up to $25 back if you miss one leg. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin on a numbers game. I just want to point out, before we get to Rick Gaiman here, the beauty of that, the last portion of that last segment needs to be stressed, which is immediately I said, I'm not going to have you say it, Drew, but I'll say it. There's no way you can possibly lose this, right, on Mike Brown. But the person with the ticket, Drew cannot lose this bet.
It is the better psychology, right?
But he correctly, I think most would say, right? We love Drew. He correctly cannot bring himself to feel comfortable about it because he'll think it, because the better thinks of every scenario where they could get torpedoed by this. Perhaps that's a healthy viewpoint of it. Oh, I don't know.
It definitely right? is. You're right. It's yeah. probably it's a healthy viewpoint if you're in his shoes.
That's right.
I can sit here in my shoes as an NBA bettor and say, Mike Brown's winning coach of the year.
Of course he can. Of course he will.
He's winning coach of the year. You're cashing those tickets.
He can't get hurt to miss the next 11, 12 days. Even if he does, it won't be held against him, right? What could possibly go wrong? Now, let's say they lost every game the rest of the way. Could he lose then? If they lost the rest of their games.
we're talking about something like
I'm
that.
Just saying, that if that it, happens, it, maybe Drew's right.
That combined with the Celtics retaking the one seed over the Bucks.
So there is a scenario. So he's right.
I mean, yes. Again, yeah. he should be thinking that way. But like,
he should be.
This is what we're talking about.
I just love the psychology of the better is the greatest thing in the world. I don't know. This could happen. What do you say? They could be fourth or fifth seed, and then people will hold that again?
Yeah,
so,
no,
come
no.
on.
2006. Stop last it. Time they made the playoffs.
Stop it. Love that. Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Gaiman joins us to talk some golf with us. He's the host of the first cut podcast, I should say, and founder of RickRunGood.com. You can follow him on Twitter at RickRunGood. I love that. How you doing, Rick? Good to see you again, man.
I'm doing well, Gil. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Before we get into golf, I noticed that you were doing bracket stuff as well, telling people, like, you know, the best ways to sort of maximize profits in your bracket. I love that you right. stepped into that. How is your bracket looking, I should say?
It's actually laying out pretty nicely. So, yeah, so for the uninitiated, I step out of college basketball retirement once a year for the bracket, because that's just a big math problem that I like. And I do not watch a second of college basketball all year long, and I just simply compare, you know, probabilities against – you know, the way that people are choosing brackets, how often they have Alabama going deep into the bracket. So we are still alive with six of our eight Elite Eight teams. All of our Final Four teams are still in it. We avoided all of the big disasters with Arizona and Purdue and Virginia. We've got Houston against Creighton in the final. So we are alive, still plenty of disaster lurking, but so far so good.
So much disaster lurking. Say the same thing with my Survivor entry. So good and yet so far away. Yep. All right, let's transition. WGC Dell Technologies Match Play, Austin Country Club in Austin, Texas. Obviously a different format. Please describe what the format is to us, different from your normal PGA Tour event, and how this messes with your handicapping. Is it to the good or to the bad historically?
Yeah, so not only different from a normal week in, week out on the PGA Tour schedule, but also different from what they used to do at this event. You know, back in 2014 and prior, this was single elimination, one and done. If you lost your first match, go home, get out of here, get out of town. What they've done recently in the last handful of years is they've changed this to a group style round robin, almost like the World Cup. So there are 16 groups of four. The top 16 seeds all get their own group, and then the three other participants in each one of those groups was drawn on Monday. So for the first 3 days of this tournament, everyone will play everyone else in their group with only the one winner advancing. And then we'll get to that single elimination format where once you're in the Sweet 16, if you lose, you're out until we have a champion on Sunday. And the way that it kind of impacts my handicapping is that I don't really, you know, if I'm going to make, let's say, three, four outright wagers, I want my guys to have access to the Final Four, to the championship as much as possible, right? I would not take two outrights of two golfers coming out of the same group or coming out of the same side of the bracket. The casual people who just want to put in four bets this week, grab one guy from each side, each region, right? We're in March Madness. This terminology is familiar to us this time of year. Grab a golfer from each region and give yourself the best chance of getting as far as you can.
Ah, that's right. It's all coming back now. Because I remember we threw up the bracket last year when we were doing this, or a couple of years ago on primetime action, whatever. We're like, oh, here are the pods. They're just sort of a homage to the NCAA tournament. Okay, so here are the outright odds with defending champion Scottie Scheffler. No surprise, probably the short shot on everything these days, along with Jon Rahm. And I mean, those two guys are just live in every tournament. They're course proof. format proof. Rory McIlroy, Max Homa might say something about that as well, because those guys are consistently great. Did you do anything in the outrights, Rick?
Yeah, I got a couple of outrights in already. You know, you look at the groupings, and John Rahm, for as great as he is, he's kind of in a really tough draw. He has two golfers that are playing the best they have in a long time: Keith Mitchell, Ricky Fowler, and Billy Horschel, who won this event a couple of years ago. Really tough draw for John Rahm out of the two seed. Rory McIlroy gets himself another tough draw. That's Keegan Bradley and Denny McCarthy, who you don't want to play Keegan in match play. He's an absolute maniac. He cares too much about anything. And then Denny McCarthy, the best putter on planet Earth, when you get to match play, that's super scary. So a couple of tough draws for the top guys. I've opted to go start with Max Homa. I think Max Homa is well-rounded. He's proving to be one of the better players in the world. He's got a great caddy on the bag in Joe Greiner, where you have to kind of just go through this very much even keel over the course of the event. So Max Homa gets an outright from me. A little bit further down the board, someone like Cameron Young coming out of group 15. I mean, that is statistically the easiest group, and it's not even close. He's got Sepp Straka, Corey Connors, Davis Thompson. When you have to play match play against someone like Cam Young, who has an elite skill set, the way that he bombs it, the way that he is able to kind of get hot with the putter, and now he's got Paul Tesori, Webb Simpson's old caddy on the bag for the first time this week. He could be a very difficult out. So I'd start with those two, and then the fun part about this, Gil, is,
yeah,
you know, we've seen some crazy names get to the Final Four. We've seen some crazy names take deep, deep runs at this. If you want to access the long shots, this is kind of the week in the format to do so.
And it's also, you know, we're used to, maybe not Nevada, by the way, brief aside, but we're used to generally top fives, top tens being available, top 20s. Here, because of the bracket format, not only can you pick them to win, but you get top twos, like they reach the final, top fours, they reach the Final Four. So I would imagine this elicits or sort of provokes a lot of bets from you in those markets as well.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And it's very similar to, it's so great that we get this in the midst of March Madness for college basketball, right? Our brains are functioning in that way. So when you start looking at guys and say, man, can they really win? What if they do run into John Rahm? What if they do run into Scottie Scheffler? But I trust them to kind of make a run deep. That would be someone like a Sahith Tagala. You know, Sahith is coming out of group 11. He has Matt Fitzpatrick as his headliner, as his top seed. Fitzpatrick's been dealing with a neck injury. If you're dealing with an ailment and you are going to the match play and having to play seven matches over 5 days doesn't sound particularly great. He's got Minwoo Lee out of that group and JJ Spahn. Volatility is good this week, Gil. So if you get a guy who can make three birdies in a row but would normally give it all back with a double, fine. That's only losing one hole. The birdies are where you're at here. So someone like Sahith, who is just super volatile, makes a bunch of birdies, he is someone who can make a deep run at this.
Rick, what are you looking at for first round matchup bets? What do you like there tomorrow morning? Begins on Wednesday, by the way, everybody.
yes, we probably should have mentioned that. Get your bets in, get everything in early. There is one that I saw that is Tom Hoagie versus Aaron Wise, and the way that they do this is, you know, the A player usually plays the D player in on day one, and then A plays C, and then B, and then A plays B. The way they do this, so we know all the matchups in advance. Aaron Wise, Vegas guy, you know, love him to death. He is not the player that we have seen over the course of the last 18 months or so. I mean, he is just hemorrhaging strokes from tee to green. His putter has always kind of been troublesome. And then Tom Hoagie, who we saw again go really, really low at TPC Sawgrass, this guy who can start firing darts and start rattling off birdies in bunches, that's a really scary golfer to go up against. And when you're already struggling and you've got to look in the eyes of Tom Hoagie, it's going to be a tough out for Aaron Wise.
Rick, great to see you, man. WGC Dell Technologies Match Play. Appreciate it. And yes, I should have repeated what I said earlier. The reason we're doing golf on Tuesday is because it starts tomorrow. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
Rick Gaiman, everybody, at Rick Run Good.
Yep, got to check out his site if you're a golf bettor.
RickRunGood.com. By the way, I see Hideki Matsuyama's name up there. We were talking about this, you and I, by text last night. You know, Shohei, After Japan's win at the WBC, he can clearly understand every word of English,
but
he like chooses not to speak it.
Yeah,
because maybe he's not comfortable, but maybe it also he just doesn't want to deal with it. Hideki, you say he's the same way.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so too. Shohei clearly understands every word. Jim Root, Sweet 16 next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.